This is a spoiler alert. We are going to spoil almost every episode of Doctor Who aired to date. This includes current airing episodes of Series 10. Please, we implore you, do not listen to these episodes until you are caught up, at least on the episodes that we are talking about. You have been warned.
Problem is, Perry, we are faced with a conundrum wrapped up in a dilemma.
Hello, and welcome to the Twin Dilemma Special Series 10 Elimination Tournament Edition. I am your co-host, Fenric Lamar.
And I am your special shitty Skype co-host, Edward Grove.
Yes, that's right. Edward is not physically in Malabolgia Studios today, so you'll have to deal with the audio differences this week.
I'm actually not physically anywhere. The singularity has arrived early for me, and I am now in a state of digital consciousness.
That is why I'm looking at you in a computer screen.
Yes, and unfortunately, the singularity didn't include high-fidelity audio, so apologies to our listeners for that.
The plus side is that please go to our website, smallfinish.com, to download Edward Grove. He will be available right after this episode posts.
Yeah, but please don't do weird stuff to me. Keep me out of your dirty folder.
Let's be honest, you're a virus.
But I'm like a sweet virus, like that weird love virus from the 90s.
AIDS?
No, the computer virus.
This week, battling it out, our returning champion, once again, Thin Ice.
That's episode 3.
What sound it made? I couldn't hear you, but that noise, I was like, I felt it in my bones, you know? It sounded like...
Despair. Loneliness. A prisoner in chains.
Facing off against newcomer, the Eaters of Light.
That's episode 10.
The Ninth Legion and the Keeper of the Gate. They disappeared.
Except they didn't.
Where is my friend, and what destroyed the Roman army?
Something here managed to wipe out 5,000 Romans.
Okay, Edward Grove, after watching these two episodes, which one are you gonna go with?
Despite all my hopes and dreams for our returning classic writer, I'm sticking with Thin Ice.
I'm a little on the fence about this one. I think I'm getting the feeling that maybe you dislike this episode a little bit more than I am. So I will defend Eaters of Light.
Excellent. We've got a dilemma and we've got no coin flip since it'd be hard to verify over the internet.
Well, I was thinking if we did have to do a coin flip, I would just lie and say that I won.
I wouldn't put it past you, you dirty scoundrel. So I will begin, as Thin Ice is the classic episode, in that it's better. But no, I'll hit up a few points about Thin Ice that I think we haven't really discussed over the course of our many discussions of Thin Ice. One is that I think it is a really remarkable performance from Capaldi. You know, I think we've talked a lot about how great Bill is because it presents a really strong arc for her, but that's probably Capaldi's best performance yet. He's remarkable in that episode.
Ever.
I think so. Because not only is it just great acting, you know, his monologue about never having the fortune or time for outrage, but it's also a performance that's rooted in a full understanding of his doctor, I think, for arguably the first time. And one other thing I think we've probably touched on briefly, but hasn't gotten quite enough attention, is just how great looking of an episode it is. The wardrobe is fantastic. The visual design is fantastic.
Okay, let me talk about the Eaters of Light. As Edward touched on, this is the first New Who story to be written by a classic writer. That is Rona Munro, who wrote Survival, the very last episode of Classic. And I think she nails it. I think that this is an absolutely fantastic episode. It feels weird for me to say this, that New Who dared to actually do a fucking story that feels like it's not a historical, obviously, but it's not just taking place in the past for no fucking reason. You know, there's a story that's actually pertinent to the time period that it's taking place in, which hasn't really happened that much under Stephen Moffat's run. I mean, obviously it happened a lot under Russell T. Davies. I think that splitting up the Doctor and Bill feels pertinent in a way that a lot of times it just kind of feels like they're just trying to add story, but kind of both of them get to do this really interesting thing that's kind of set up in the first couple minutes of their have this bet about what happened to the Ninth Legion. Am I correct about that?
I was going to say Fifth, but I don't know. Don't put me on the spot. I only just saw the episode.
The biggest downside to that, and I know it definitely seems from like reading internet reviews that we are still alone in the idea that Nardole's not very good.
Well, listen, let me respond to you here. I actually did enjoy Eaters of Light quite a bit. Honestly, I felt like it was coming back from the classic series, and what Rena Munro brought back in spirit was a sense of imagination and willingness to play with history that felt really lively. And I did really enjoy that sense of it. But where I think it falls down is in part the way it divides and constructs its story. Because, yes, it separates Bill and the Doctor, but ultimately I don't think it makes those two stories very compelling. You know, they both get separated and then get knocked out. They both fall asleep. They take two-day naps, which is not the most riveting thing you can do when you're separating two characters. They created a really cool opportunity there of pitting them with these two different factions and putting them on opposite sides of a war. But I think they really failed to make anything compelling out of it. I don't think they gave the Romans and the Picts particularly strong identities that were different. You know, I think the leader of the Picts, the gatekeeper, I forget if she had a name in addition to that. Oh yeah, it's Carr.
It was Carr.
Yeah, of course it's Carr.
I completely agree with you on Bill's side, because her fainting for 2 days is like ridiculous. Yeah. But I do think on the Doctor's side of it, it's kind of cool. The idea that like the gate has, when you're inside that weird ancient ruin building that has the gate, time operates in a different way than it does outside. I think that's kind of cool. Obviously, it's nothing new, but it's still interesting to the story.
I agree. I was bothered that it didn't seem to be consistent later. I didn't get the sense that later when they went in the gate, it was still functioning that way.
I think it was. It would have been cool to, when they get out at the very end, have some kind of like, you know, have like a new Scottish village on the horizon or something. And like, yeah. Oh man, we've been in there forever. But
because it should have been years and years, right?
Yeah, but that is the premise, the whole idea behind the ending. And I think that the ending is the weakest part of this episode.
Yeah, I was bothered by the ending. It felt both cheesy and sort of not justified or not earned.
It felt very rushed to me.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
But to me, my favorite part of this episode is the bit where the Romans and the Picts first come together on screen. And there's that great little exchange where for the first time in their entire history, they are able to understand each other simply because of the Doctor's existence in that room and because the TARDIS is there. And I thought that was really cool. That was an interesting way to take something that we've had since day one of Doctor Who and play with it in a way that we've never seen before.
I agree. I think that was a really great concept. For me, it was undercut slightly by the Doctor's speech about calling them all children, because that didn't track with me. I didn't think they were acting like children.
I will say I bought it for this story, but it's kind of said in a way that's like a generalization of all of space when it gets down to it, we're all children. Because it's not, I don't think it's that they sound like children, it's that they're literally being portrayed by children, you know? Carr looked, did she give an age? I don't remember if she did.
No, but the lead Roman was 18.
Yeah, he was 18. She looks like she's probably 18. And so it's that idea of,
but
you know,
those are
young
adults.
Soldiers.
And they're being particularly mature. And in that era, that's especially mature.
They're children to me. I'm an old man.
Listen, I keep telling you, you've got to get over this guilt. That's when it's okay to touch them.
I do want to ask you, legitimately, what do you think of the crow thing?
I thought the crow was mostly pretty dumb. Although I did like the idea of the car thing. I didn't really like it in execution, but I liked the idea that it was a memorial to her.
Yeah, I kind of half liked it.
Yeah, I guess like that's how I feel.
For me, it brought back a lot of PTSD of those old days being a Lost fan with the Hurley bird.
It had, in a good way and in a bad way, a classic vibe. I think in terms of other positives for Eaters of Light, I really loved the design of the creature. I think it looks,
yeah, it was really cool.
Super cool looking.
Its little tentacles that glow look awesome. And when it's actually absorbing light, that looks really great.
in terms of absorbing light, that's actually somewhere where both the creature and the story kind of lost me, because it seemed like, you know, it grew stronger in the daylight, quote unquote. It drew strength from light, but it always was choosing to attack at night, and it seemed like it was a more of a menace at night. It seemed like there was a bit of an inconsistency about basically where its strength lied, and the whole thing where, like, this thing filters light and therefore it holds it in place or weakens it. It felt like there was a bit of story logic that was either very flimsy or not altogether there.
Yeah, I mean, it was very flimsy, admittedly. There's one line kind of way to explain it where the doctor basically says, like, it negates photo processes or something like that. You know, basically, it reverses the neutron flow of light.
The neutron flow. I did like the joke, though, the death by Scotland. That was funny.
That was very good, yeah. It seems strange that it took till his fourth to last episode to actually put Capaldi in Scotland.
That's a good point. Wow.
I did think, you know, they had the opportunity to have Missy be there as well. She's Scottish now,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, we had a little bonus Missy thrown in at the end, but we'll save that for a little certain segment.
Well, yeah, I have to admit, I do really, really like this episode. For me, I think it's probably my second favorite of the series.
I think I'd have to look at them all again. I feel like Extremis is probably my second favorite. I do think this is a good episode. If it weren't for certain parts, or if certain parts were better, I would put this as my second favorite, and I'd put it very close for Thin Ice, but it's got some key weaknesses, in my opinion.
Once again, Thin Ice is going to take it.
Yeah, even coming in from out of town, can't be stopped.
So you want to do a little, can we even call it vault check anymore? Missy check?
Missy check? Missy, yeah. Vault? No matter what, the theme song's got to stay.
Yes. So as you touched on, Missy kind of shows up at the end. Turns out she's been in the TARDIS this whole time. And are they trying to say, like, the TARDIS is the vault now? Like, we don't need the vault?
I don't think so, because Nardole was still all mad she was out of the vault. So overall, what did you think of Missy's scene?
I don't know if I'm interested in this whole converting Missy to good thing. Like, here's the way I see it playing out. I see that she really wants to.
Uh-huh.
And then she sees, like, a single opportunity to do evil and does evil. And it's like, if that happens, that's fine with me.
I think it should have been a really great scene, except they went and fucking made her cry again. And yeah. I don't think you should ring that bell twice in such rapid succession. That's a really major thing, to have the master be undergoing this massive emotional catharsis and change, where suddenly she's empathizing with humans, and just to have her fucking cry all the time makes the change feel so one note.
What bothers me about it is we came in at the middle of this weird change in her story. You know, we don't know, like, she vowed, she made a vow, that's it. And now she wants to be good. Like, I need some big event at the beginning to justify it.
I would be willing to have that be off screen, or have that be, I guess, not off screen, because the event seemingly is her, you know, avoiding her execution. But what I can't take is that the depiction of her change is just getting all weepy all the time. I don't buy it.
I want to see her get zappy.
Yeah, get zappy. No, but you know what I mean? Like, she's got to be interacting with people. She can't just, you can't have a wistful shot of her with a single tear. Just imagine writing that every time. Cut to single tear on Missy's cheek. Fuck that.
Yeah, I have a hard time imagining myself writing the master cries at all.
Yeah, I feel like I would probably write more like the master sobs like a little piss baby.
Well, okay, I can picture it if it's like that little master who was brought in front of the Untempered Schism. And he's being spanked by his Time Lord dad.
By the Doctor.
There you go.
Is the Doctor not his Time Lord dad? Is that not canon?
We'll make it canon.
And he spanks the Master's little baby bottom.
So hard he regenerates into Roger Delgado. A fully grown up Roger Delgado.
And that's the day their rivalry began.
We figured it out. We solved the mystery of the Master.
God, you folks are so lucky that you're listening right now.
This brings us to the end of another episode of the Twin Dilemma Minisode, Series 10 edition. Once again, it's a truck that can't be stopped. Its brakes have been cut. It's going to have to turn down like one of those weird stone ramps. It's Thin Ice.
Its brakes have been cut, and it's here to fuck. It's thin ice.
That's what I call my penis.
Oh, thin ice.
Thin ice, yeah. Because it's hard, and I mean, you can figure out the rest.
Yeah, it's extraordinarily narrow. It's really, unfortunately, like, medically significant how narrow it is.
It's icicle-like. It's also pointy on the end.
Yeah. It's a catastrophe. It's been declared a state of emergency by the federal government.
That is my friend and colleague, Edward Grove.
And back in Malabogia Studios, our heart and home is pointy dick Fenric Lamarr.
Please tune in, presumably in 2 weeks. Probably because the next two episodes are a two-parter, we're guessing right now. It looks very likely. So please tune in again in 2 weeks to see if Thin Ice will come out on top.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Small Finish. We love dumb shit.